Well, good morning.
Good morning.
We're ready to start. Today we're going to be focusing on prayer. I titled it Knocking on God's Door. And the idea of prayer for petition, for asking for help for what you want, as a place of refuge, as a place to pray for other people, as a place to center yourself and kind of be calm and rest in God. Prayer has so many functions. But I wanted to start with the Bible because Jesus talks about prayer, because the disciples ask in Matthew 6, if you have a Bible or not, I'll read it to you. In Matthew 6, the disciples ask him, how do we pray? How are we supposed to do this? And this is the preface right before he gives them the Lord's Prayer, which we're going to go over too, which is kind of your core prayer for a prayer life, for a regular spiritual discipline. By the way, the bottom line of this talk today, if you don't get anything else, is try to have a prayer life. Work to have a daily, if possible, time for prayer or meditation. Some people call it a spiritual discipline, that if you could build that into your day, that would be your takeaway for today. Some people do it in the morning, early, so you get it done first thing. Some people do it at night, or both, before you go, last thing before you go to sleep, have a prayer time, or do both. But let me just read what Jesus says when the disciples ask him, you know, what's the deal here about prayer? He says, first he talks about the hypocrites. Jesus gets annoyed a lot, by the way, about people who say one thing and do another. And he said, when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogue on the street corners. And he really is down on people that are really public about prayer and how holy I am. And I'm praying now in front of all of you and see how great I am. He hates that because I think he sees them actually in their behavior and their actions as betraying their piety. But then he says, when you pray, go into your room. Some people say go into your closet. The King James is closet, but it's go into your room, shut the door. He says, shut the door. It's not an open door thing. Go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your father, or the Koine is Abba, daddy, who is in secret. And your father who sees in secret will reward you. And in praying, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do. So the Greeks were going on and on about long prayer, very long prayers and petitions and readings. But for they think they will be heard for their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask. Pray then like this, our Father who art in heaven, and we'll talk about that. He gives them the Lord's Prayer. And then he also goes, just to add a little more, when you fast, don't look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces, and their fasting might be seen by all people. They're very public. Truly, I say to you, they've received their reward. But when you fast, anoint your head, wash your face, that your fasting may not be seen by people, but by your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. So, you know, one of the takeaways from this is that Jesus really thinks that prayer is very private. So the idea that this is private. And this is a kind of basic idea that, you know, I don't know where you should pray in your apartment. How many people live in apartments? Yeah, everybody, we do too. Yeah, almost everybody. Somebody might have a house. But have a special place that you pray, you know, with the door shut. I mean, the Bible says shut the door. If you can shut the door, I don't know. But have a private place to pray that's continual. So that's the place you pray. I mean, you can pray, you know, on the subway too. You can pray a lot of places, but this is when you do your regular prayer time, have a place that's private. It's very important, and it's a very, very much a part of what Jesus wants us to do. The other passage is in Luke 18, 1 through 4. Actually, 1 through 14. Let me just read this to you because it's a parable. You know this one. This is the parable of the unjust judge or the importuning widow who won't shut up. Okay. And he told them a parable to the effect that they always ought to pray, always pray, and not lose heart. That is, don't give up. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor regarded man. That means he didn't give a flying whatever about anything. He didn't care. He was unmoved by things. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him and saying, vindicate me against my adversary. Do something. For a while he refused, but afterward he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor regard man, yet this widow bothers me, and I will vindicate her. She will wear me out by her continual coming. She won't give up. And the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge says. And will not God vindicate his elect who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will vindicate them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? He also told a story, a parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous, yet despised other people. Two men went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. Pharisees were high status. Tax collectors were lowest status. The Pharisee stood up and prayed like this. God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, extortioners, the unjust, the adulterers, and even like this awful tax collector who's over here. I fast twice a day. I give money to the church. I do all the good stuff. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven. But he beat his breast and said to God, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. I don't know what the takeaway on that is. Hi, Don. So, I think one of these things, we got private here, but I think also in the widow story, persist. And be humble, right? There's a humility here. And in some ways also a simplicity. I'm going to put simple. Jesus isn't big on a lot of flourishes and wordiness in your prayers. It's keep it simple. Keep it humble. Also, persistence, in a way, I like the other word, relentless. Relentless. This widow wouldn't stop. So those are some of the qualities that come straight from Jesus. That's the Jesus stuff that we want in how we pray and how we have a spiritual discipline. Now the core, of Jesus' prayer that he said you should pray is the Our Father. So let me just go through a few things, a few ideas about the Lord's Prayer, which is a whole lecture in itself. But one, I think there's different aspects here, but it's, what's the first two lines? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. We all know that one, right? In fact, people with advanced Alzheimer's, I was visiting an Alzheimer's ward up in Rye, New York the other day. And if I started saying, especially for the Christians, the Lord's Prayer, even though they have no memory of who I am, where they are, whatever, let me out of here. They don't know, they can say the Lord's Prayer. Early memory. Very early, it's one of the earlier things we were taught to memorize, even as a 3-year-old, 4-year-old sometimes, Our Father. So, and in the Aramaic, in the Hebrew, it's Abba, daddy. It's our daddy. It's an intimate idea that we're close to God. God is very close to us with this Abba. And at the same time, we have Our Father, our daddy, who is in heaven. Holy be your name, the Yahweh, the name that can't be spoken, the God that's transcendent. This is on Mount Sinai with the burning bush, yet it's intimate. There's a juxtaposition of intimacy and transcendence when we first introduce the prayer. And then what's the second few lines? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So that kingdom come, thy will be done. In some ways, now this is just one way of looking at it, this idea that we want to be aligned with God's will. We're asking to be, let me be in a path that you set for me that I'm on, being aligned with God's will and kind of doing that, your will on earth as it is in heaven. I'm in this life, this broken life that's complicated, but I want to be in line with your will. So keep me on the path. Keep me on the path. You know, one of the Greek words for sin is not a bad thing you did. It's being off the path. I mean, one is missing the mark. It's an archery term. The other is being off the path. It's like at the labyrinth. I'm off the labyrinth path. So keep me in line with your will. And then what's the next one? Give us this day our daily bread. Now, if you think of that, that's sort of redundant. Why do we say give us this day our daily? We're saying daily twice. Jesus emphasizes that this is it, this day. He doesn't say give us this day all the bread from, you know, D'Agostino's that we need for the week. Or for the month or for the year or even a good harvest. He's saying give us this day our daily bread. That's it. It's thisness. There's a kind of thisness. I was talking to a friend at the Franciscan Church over at St. Francis over by Madison Square Garden. He said that Franciscans have a new thing they're doing now, that all the Franciscans have to study and learn thisness. He said thisness and nowness, because in a way, this phrase, give us this day, what is today, Sunday the whatever, 18th, our daily bread today. So it's about this bread, this thing, where you are now, in this time, now. And also enoughness. These are not really words. Enoughness. Somehow this is enough to be present to the day and that God will provide for us this day. Yeah.
Isn't that because really all there is isness?
Yeah, it's true.
It's like this second is all we've got. We could all stop breathing in the next second, and having been there, I can testify to that. But, you know, so it's like the past is done. The future isn't here. This is it. Make the most of it now. And if you get a lot of minutes that you did the most of it, you end up a winner.
Yep, definitely. So this being present to the moment, to the present moment, is in this prayer. It's embedded in this prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. This is enough. This is it. This breathing, every breath you're taking right now. And then we're moving into what's the next line? And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And we do debts, and some people do trespass, and we can go on. That's a whole other lecture on which one to use. Yeah, so this idea of forgiveness, forgiving. Jesus is huge on this. Forgive us our debts. I mean, we ask for forgiveness from God, and then we are forgiving people. In a way, even actually, there's a few phrases after the Lord's Prayer, which are sort of the curses, which we never talk about hardly. But Jesus, who had, I think, a bit of a temper too, he said, if you don't forgive people, then God won't forgive you. You know, it's like there's a little bit of a stick here. It's not just a carrot. But forgiveness, forgiving ourselves, asking God for forgiveness, forgiving other people, letting go of all those things that cut us off from one another, that we don't speak to people or somebody who said something wrong or we interpreted it negatively. Let it go. Forgiveness. Doesn't mean forgetting. Doesn't mean accepting abuse. But it means letting go of that which holds us back from love. And then... Yeah.
Does that say that we are forgiven as we forgive?
Well, that's the implication.
So it really depends on my forgiving if I'm going to be forgiven.
Yes. Yes, you need to do it. I mean, in some ways, our initiating.
That's not thought of very often, but that's really what it says.
Yeah, we need to take the initiative in some ways, and that then forgiveness happens, you know, if we do that. Having hardness of heart, you know, hardness of heart, which is kind of an old saying, but kind of like, I'm going to keep my grudge, and I'm going to not speak to those people. We have noisy neighbors above us on the third floor. You know, kind of we're just going to hold on to this aggravation. That seems to limit grace. Grace being the mercy, unmerited mercy of God on us. So it's better to be forgiving. Yeah. I know it. To be present. So to have this relationship with God. I mean, there's one more. Let me get one more here. I just wanted deliverance. And deliverance. Which is interesting, you know, in the word for the self, we think of salvation a lot, but in French, the translation for a lot of these words for salvation is deliverance. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. It doesn't mean don't tempt us. We will be tempted. And we will be in situations where we'll make dumb choices. But in a way, this is a prayer to help us not make the dumb choice.
It almost sounds like take us out of there.
Yeah, take us out, rescue us, lead us not into temptation. Like, come on, you're going to do, come on, go ahead. Do this thing, whatever. Act out, punch the guy, do something, whatever. You know, my dad... I shouldn't talk about my dad here, but well, we always added up. You know, he'd always add up the grocery bill, or he'd add up the waiter, the bill on the tab with the restaurant. And if it was right, he would be okay. If it was wrong, we were paying too much, he'd make a big stink about it. But if it was in our favor, we wouldn't. That's their problem, because it's a dog eat dog world, and everybody's out for themselves. And you got to survive. And if you get a break because the guy didn't add it right, you get a free bottle of wine out of it, go for it. I mean, that's, God bless him. He's graduated now. I think he's not doing that again. But this is a temptation. You know, lead us not into temptation, but, you know, deliver us from evil so we don't get into it, get into the thing. So you're right, this is hard. I mean, just to sum up, but this is the prayer we're asked to pray. That we're close to this God that loves us, but he is also God in heaven. And we're trying to align with God's will in our vocation, in our daily life. We're living in the moment. So this actually the opportunity to be kind is here right now. The opportunity to be whatever, forgiving is here right now. There's a this-ness and a now-ness to this. And an enoughness. We don't have to crave more. That this is enough. And then we're asked to forgive, to be forgiving people, and we'll experience the grace of God's forgiveness. And then help us to stay on the path. Keep us from, you know, doing dumb stuff. And deliver us. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. That's the Lord's Prayer. It's pretty cool. But it's hard. It's not the easiest thing to do. Yeah.
Well, then isn't it really interesting that Jesus was teaching this to the masses, because prayer was sort of seen as a thing to just the priests, and it's something you went to somebody else to do.
Right.
But he was like, okay, this, he kind of demystified it a little bit, saying that this, first of all, you're teaching this concept of a great God. Now you're calling him Father, personal.
Right.
So he's taken this mysticism and this eliteness, and he's given it to the common man. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much so. He broke, in some ways, Jesus was a rule breaker from Orthodox Judaism, and he broke a lot of the rules. He made this stuff public. And even that second story we read about, it's called the Jesus Prayer, the tax collector, all he prays is the simple stuff. God, have mercy on me, a sinner. God, have mercy on me. He said, that's enough. You don't have to be an Elizabethan dramatist with all the these and thous and the long prayers to be heard by God. In fact, Jesus suggests that a highly flourished, long verbal prayer, he said, those people have their reward, which to me, that means Jesus is, you know, they're going to get it. That's not going to work. But this lowly guy who has a humble, simple prayer, which anybody can do, God help me, have mercy on me, a sinner, will be heard or vindicated by God, which is kind of interesting because that became, let me just write this down, the Jesus prayer, which, you know, Arthur Colleandro and others have mentioned it, and it's actually the prayer that the Greek Orthodox use, Mount Athos and other places, where they do the repetition of Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner, or not a sinner, have mercy on me and make haste to help me. There are different versions of it, but it's real simple. There are some tombs that are the Benedictine Monastery out in Minnesota. The tombs all just say, you know, Father Smith, Jesus, mercy. Two words. That's the shortest you can get on the Jesus prayer. Jesus, mercy, with in-breath, out-breath. But it's the Jesus prayer is another way to go in your spiritual discipline. So I wanted to just say a little more. We can have more questions in a second. I just wanted to say, this is kind of the what. This is the what of this stuff. And based on what Jesus is expecting us to do, based on his stories and indications. But the how do you do this? So often we don't get to how, we just talk about what. So how are you going to adapt this to your own personal life? So I would suggest, again, finding a place in your apartment to pray and having a time designated for this. We do 20 minutes. That's a little long for some people. You could do 5 minutes. You could just do 10 minutes in the morning. Sometimes first thing is better before that cup of coffee or even after the cup of coffee, whatever, because your mind isn't still cluttered with your to-do list necessarily, or you're not in the working mode with all the wheels turning about what I have to do. So doing this, I would suggest the following. Having an opening prayer. Sit down, calm yourself so you're comfortable. Have an opening prayer. Usually that's the Lord's Prayer. I think the discipline should include the Lord's Prayer and breathing slowly when you do it. And maybe don't think too much about it, overthinking the whole thing, because this is hard. Am I going to do this? Am I forgiving enough? Oh, I'm a big failure on this stuff. I didn't do the right thing, or I blew it the other night, or, you know, you can get into it. Just pray the prayer, because you know it. You have it in your head. So you can pray this once or twice. And then I would just say find a clear, open space in your own mind to take a few minutes just to breathe. Maybe watching your thoughts, but returning to a word or a breath, returning to Jesus or a word like love, and just do that for 5 minutes. It's harder than you think to do that because your mind's racing. This mind is like a puppy. You know, if we released a puppy in here, it would start doing this, and, you know, it would start going all over. That's your brain. You're like, oh, what am I doing now? What's after this? The service. Are we going to get there in time? I don't know. What's for lunch? I'm hungry. You know, it's Sunday. Is it going to rain? Apparently, later. I don't know. But blah, 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 blah. Keep going. Calm that down. Open space. 5 minutes. And then maybe pray some intentions you may have for yourself or what virtues you may need. Pray for other people. I often say pray for the virtues you need. Like sometimes I need patience. Like I get impatient with people and things, and so I ask God for patience for that virtue. There's some people may need courage. Give me the courage to speak up. I need to say something about this. I'm going to speak up. Or give me, you know, the humility. Or whatever it is you need. Or pray for other people. Pray for your family. Pray for the kids. Pray for, you know, the neighbors. Pray for the marble church, for the people here. The idea of praying for others. that they may be safe, that they might be healthy, that they might heal. Pray for those who grieve, because a lot of people have lost loved ones in this room. Pray for that. Pray for healing for yourself in the grief process. Some people even, this isn't a Reformed tradition, but I kind of go with it. Pray for those who have passed. They're with God already, but you can still hold them in light because you love them. You know, you can wish them well. It's a little, I'm getting a little Catholic now a little bit on this, but that's okay. But you can, all this time at the end of your spiritual prayer time, you can pray for yourself and others in various ways. And it's a very rich time. I sometimes move, this is more literal, but I'll sometimes move from a prayer posture where I'm just sitting like this, kind of meditating, kind of Buddha looking, and I'm just sitting there. But when I move to the prayer for others or myself, I'll move it up here. And kind of holding, you're kind of hugging yourself, but also holding your heart. And you're kind of wishing, you know, for help, but also caring, you know, loving kindness for others. So no matter how screwy things are in family systems or in people, but you're praying for them. So that's just one suggestion. So that's that, the how. So if you could do it, that's your homework maybe this week, if you could find a morning time to do that. I mean, the other idea, the other time that a lot of people, spiritual directors use is that, I don't know, when you go to bed. We go to bed, as I get older, it gets earlier and earlier. So it's like 9 o'clock. It's really, I say 10, but often it's 9, I'm getting calling. But whenever you're getting ready for bed, before you shut the lights off or tell Alexa to shut the lights off or whatever you're doing, maybe do a little prayer time then before you go to sleep. It's like, you know, one director says, it's like shooting a little arrow into your unconscious mind before you go to bed, right? Before you knock off completely, saying, God, you know, have mercy on me, and say the Lord's Prayer, and kind of help me this day, and be with me, surround me with your love, and say the Lord's Prayer, and then you just nod out. It's a nice way to go to sleep. It also sends a message to your unconscious that I'm spiritually open, that I intend to be loving, I intend to be forgiving, I mean to. I mean, you're going to fall off the wagon 100 times, but you're going to come back. That's why it said in the scripture to pray and not lose heart. This idea, because you're going to fall off the wagon. You're going to blow up at somebody or something's going to happen. But even then, you ask for forgiveness and you forgive and we're back. So we're building spiritual resilience. The idea of spiritual resilience is the ability to bounce back from when you miss the mark or get off the path. So those are the two things. The other thing I want to mention, just I would call it prayer on the run. Prayer on the run is, I don't know, 5 minutes. You're sitting in church. You got there early. Like maybe we're going to get out early. You could sit, go up there and sit and do a little prayer for 5 minutes to prepare for worship. Another would be sitting, you know, on the subway. I do this. I like the context where the potential for me to get annoyed is higher. The subway and Grand Central at 5 o'clock. So I'm doing like this, you know, you're trying to get through, or the people on the sidewalk, like, how come people don't move for me? You know, I'm going in a straight line. These people are like, what's going on here? You know? So suddenly I'm getting annoyed. Or, you know, why isn't this car moving? Or, you know, things aren't happening the way I want them. The world should happen the way I want it to happen, and it doesn't. I end up praying for compassion, for a bigger heart, and being more forgiving and more tolerant. I don't mean just to be a doormat either, but to be able to not be so reactive. Help me, God, give me peace. And give me compassion for these other people who are rushing around. I don't know where they're trying to get to, but, and the lady with the stroller who's just about to run me over. And that's okay in a way. I can move. I'm still able to do that. So somehow it's an opportunity actually on the subway or other places to really exercise compassion and forgiveness. And it's an opportunity to pray. I mean, these are all mobile prayers because you're, you know, you got your eyes wide open. You're not kind of. So those are kind of prayers on the run. It's really loving kindness. You know, a lot of the Buddhists have these loving kindness meditations where you're praying, you're sending out loving kindness to the crowd, to Grand Central. You do a whole subway car of people. So that's another way to cultivate compassion. And then if, you know, we can do a few more questions if you have any. That's about all I have. There's a lot of spiritual reading to be done. And if you want to ask me about that, I can give those books to you later. Just the one of my favorites, which is here somewhere. Here it is. Because sometimes after you do a prayer time, like 10 minutes, you can also do a little reading. And this is called Streams of Grace. It's by the Abbé de Tourville, who was one of the great spiritual directors in the 1700s. There's a whole bunch of French spiritual directors that really are brilliant in helping people who came to them, a lot of nuns and monks, but just Catholic lay people, and they gave them advice. So this is one of my favorites because he has little excerpts, and they're very forgiving. They're so much good spiritual direction is about don't be so hard on yourself. You know, don't lose heart. Keep going, even though you blew it completely. Or you thought about your to-do list the whole time for 10 minutes. Ken said I should at least pray the Lord's Prayer. I could hardly finish that because I was worried about something. Okay, that's okay. You did it. You know, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who was one of the great Hasidim, said, even if you put your butt on the chair, or he was talking about this going to shul, but if you sit in the pew, just putting your butt on the pew upstairs, there's great joy in heaven, even if you pay no attention to what happens the whole time. Just doing a little bit, poco a poco. There's a lot of Mexican traditions about little by little spirituality. So even doing something, that very act of prayer, and the intention that tomorrow morning, which is Monday the 19th, I'm going to get up and I'm going to have a cup of coffee and then I'm going to sit on this chair where I'm going to pray for 5 minutes. And maybe it'll be a kind of not that great a prayer because it'll be thinking about other stuff. But there's great joy in heaven that you did that. So little by little. So any questions? Yeah.
Very often we pray and if it be thy will. And how can you incorporate into that something like being bolder and saying, it's already your will, I'm claiming it, something like that?
Well, how do you find the courage? Because there is a difference, yeah, there's a danger with all this stuff of quietism, of just being so, in a way, passive. But I think Jesus wants us to, if the God's will is we want to have a voice for justice or we want to be bold, I would incorporate that into the prayers too. If it's clearly God wills our boldness, I would ask for help with that, support with that, look into it if it's God's will. But I mean, that's a good question.
I have two statements. My favorite is, this is the day the Lord has made.
Yep,
let
great.
Us rejoice and be
this.
Glad. I yep. love that. And my production is I have a red mailbox, which has angels on it, and I have a rhinestone angel hanging. And people call me and ask me to pray for different things that are happening. So my production number is writing on a file card every day things that are happening to people that I love and things that mean a lot to me. And it goes in my mailbox.
Oh, I love it. That's great. Yeah, that's another great ritualized way of doing that, where you write things down and pray for them and put it in. Yeah, having rituals, even if they're little, like every day I put on the robe, I get the coffee, put on the robe, then I go to this chair and do this thing. It sounds very mechanical, but having a ritual where you do certain things, like the mail, write it down, we love them, I'm praying for them, put it in. Those are powerful actions. You create a habit, a spiritual habit. So, yeah.
First of all, Ken, thank you for being here.
Oh, yeah, yes. Sure. Yeah.
And then, could you give me the name of the author of that?
Yeah, this guy's, well, he's called the Abbe, A-B-B-E, Abbe in French, De, D-E, Tourville. So it's T-O-U-R-V-I-L-L-E. It's on Amazon, I think. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Ken, you know, I'm a big fan of yours.
Mine gets you fast. Yeah. Just
got it. big fan of yours. Been coming here for every week relentlessly for the last 12 and a half years religiously.
Right.
And, you know, coming in here with you know, a simple book of prayers and petitions for New York City at large, like this stack here in my pocket,
mm-hmm.
and watching it, this private book of private assets under my management, cauliflower into the Barack presidency, cauliflower into Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and creating government programs for this city at large, and then
to get more
prayer petitions again. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find a way to have you and the members of Marble help me reprivatize my life and bring my petitions, all the world's petitions, back in my private sanctitude.
Okay, well, let's talk about that afterwards. I want to talk with you about it. Okay, good.
Hi, I'm the first and second grade teacher here at CYF, and it's taken me a long time, but I've worked to encourage the children to say grace before their meal.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else I can do while they're here to encourage them to, in some way, to incorporate prayer into their
great question. Life. Yeah. Well, I didn't mention grace, which is a whole other thing. I think that's wonderful practice to have. One thing we did with our kids and a lot of people do is kind of nighttime prayers, bedtime prayers, so that can get longer and longer as they don't want to go to bed. You're used to with our kids. But have them, or maybe talk to parents before you talk to the kid, but having some nighttime prayer, which is both calming and it teaches kids to pray. And having that and allowing them to pray, and we mostly intercessions, you know, God bless mommy and daddy and my sister, except not that one sister, and you know, and the fish. We had to bless all the pets and stuff like that. But having the prayer at night before you go to bed, I think is powerful. And it begins to embed and maybe repeat together the Lord's Prayer. Begin teaching them some of the memorized prayers. We don't memorize anymore. This notion of having some memorization, that deep memory, which is with you your whole life. So I would encourage that. I mean, we used to pray. My mother was a sort of darn-the-wool Lutheran in Minnesota, and we used to pray before we went on these trips on vacations in the car. We'd all hold our hands together. We'd be in the back seat, and I would be bugging my sister. You know, it's those typical car trips. But we'd say a little prayer that we'd be safe, and then we have an okay trip. And sometimes we didn't, but we tried. And we had a little prayer, which is sort of corny now, because I don't know if anybody ever does that anymore. Yeah. But praying before a trip, I mean, together, with your partner, with somebody. I mean, I think it'd be good. Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful saying, more things are brought by prayer than this world dreams of?
I know, is that Shakespeare, maybe? Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, Claire?
Since author introduced us to the Jesus Prayer, it has become part of, when I walk on the street, I'm saying it as I walk on the street.
Me
when
too.
I'm in the gym rowing, I'm praying it. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me. Make haste to help me.
Right, right.
Rescue me and save me. Do your will in my life. I mean, I think that just doing in a repetitive way really puts me in the mode of, especially when I'm walking on the street, of being mindful of people around me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I highly recommend that become part of all of our lives.
Yeah, that's the most portable prayer. And it's also, as Protestants, we're sort of not supposed to do vain repetition and all that, but this tradition and repeating something this basic and simple, it embeds it in a deep way in your body. So I think it's great for walking. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was very encouraged about your word simple. And prayer, simple prayer, I learned many, many years ago. I was in the hospital, and I had a tumor on the brain the size of a golf ball.
Oh, boy.
And the doctor was talking to me and asking me about it. He says, well, we'll do some x-rays again in the morning, and we'll go in to the operating room. But that night, I thought, well, I have three babies, and this is not very good. And in those days, people would become vegetables a lot of times, were, you know, brain surgery. So I said, I just don't need this. I have to take care of my children. It was simple. The next morning, I had the shampooed hair, the x-ray, hit the ER, the OR door. X-rays are clear.
Wow. No. That's a miracle. Yeah. Wow.
Hi. I have a question, but I also want to just backtrack a little bit on forgiveness. I wish I knew as much Aramaic as you do, but one word that I really liked learning was that supposedly in Aramaic, the word for forgive is the same as the word for untie.
Right,
and
right.
And it's really helped me in life because there like were that. People that I wanted to be untied from.
Right. I think that's a great image, too.
But my question, it's a little bit of a two-folder, is how do you feel about gratitude in prayer? Like, God, I thank you for my healthy body. I thank you that I have a clear mind. Like that kind of thing. But also, what's your stance on praying for exactly what you want? I'm joking, but what if it was like, God, I want a brand new red Cadillac? Mm-hmm. I mean, I am joking, but I also would genuinely like to know.
Well, first, the gratitude one is the easiest because gratitude, I should have put that in. I mean, that's a huge piece in people getting to gratitude. You know, guilt, grace, and gratitude are the three G's, you know, in the Reformed tradition that you admit we're broken. We ask for God's grace, and we get it, and we're grateful for this life. So expressing gratitude in prayer in your prayer time is a wonderful idea. Sometimes that's a good thing to do at the end of the prayer time, winding it up. Praying for what you want, I think that requires some discernment. I guess you can pray for anything if you want it. I want to, but the red Cadillac, is that a symbol of something else? I mean, I would examine the wish. And is it urgent, or is it a craving, or what does it mean to want that? To want that, maybe I want the status. Yeah, I've been looking at fancy cars lately myself. And I was thinking, well, I could have that. Then I thought, wait, I wouldn't want to dent it. I would be worrying about it. You know, what do I really want? I mean, that's a great question. What do I really want or need right now, really? Or is this enough? This thisness, nowness, and enoughness. Is it enough? Is this enough? Because so much of what we do is craving. Craving and wanting more. If only this happened, then I would be happy. If only this happened. So this question of what to pray for, I mean, that's why going slowly and spending some silent time and just working on being aligned with God's will, what am I supposed to do with my life?
Yeah. My 12-step friends are like, you only pray for God's will. That's you don't pray for, I hope my arm will heal. You know, I pray. It's like you only pray for God's will. So, implying that there's something wrong.
Right. See, I think, I tend to be less doctrinaire about it because I think you're free here. We're working with freedom. So that if you do that, it may not happen. And I think you need to examine the question of what you know, but I don't think it's wrong. Like even praying for the dead, praying for the whatever, I think you can pray for anything you want to pray for. You're free to do that. But I would examine a little bit what's your real longing? What's real at some point? Any other thoughts or questions? Yeah.
What about just talking to God?
Which is what prayer is.
You know, it's
I find myself doing that quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And I just talk to him, and I don't expect him to send a lightning bolt down and do it immediately. But years later, sometimes I say, thank you.
Right.
Because I had a relationship once that broke up. And I felt badly, of course. But I said to God, well, let's hope this is the right thing. And you know what? Mm. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't see it that
right.
much.
Uh-huh.
But talking to God that way afterwards, you do get answers.
Right. If you get to a point like you are, where this Abba, where you're kind of, God's a friend, and you have a relationship with this person, because you have a daily conversation. That's what a relationship is. Can you imagine having a friend that you almost never talk to, except if you're in big trouble, then you'll do it, you know, on the airplane, the takeoff. The only time I call is when the airplane's come. So you're saying you have a conversation with God a lot. And which is another way to go on this. Besides having your morning prayer time, you could just have a regular conversation, or you're walking with a Jesus prayer on Park Avenue or whatever, all the time. Yeah. Now what, God? What do you think? You know, we're a we, so there's that strong relationship. But, well, I'm aware of our time. Now we're supposed to relate to God upstairs. And God's very happy if you sit in that pew, just sitting there. Okay, thank you.